A number of you expressed your appreciation during the last year for some of the sermons I preached that illuminated the way that Mark's gospel often makes connections between different stories, connections that are easily missed when we hear the stories in isolation from one another, but which make the stories all the more meaningful and powerful when we discover them. Well, Mark was certainly not the only gospel writer who drew connections between different parts of the story of Jesus' life. And tonight we have an example of Luke doing the same thing. I don't think I'd actually noticed this one before. I've preached on the connection that Matthew makes between the infancy stories and the crucifixion stories because his story about Herod's attempt to kill the infant Jesus clearly foreshadows the later plot to have him crucified. But Luke doesn't tell that story. And I hadn't noticed anything similar in Luke's gospel before, but here it is in tonight's story of the 12-year-old Jesus. Luke tells us that each year Jesus' family went up to Jerusalem for the Passover. And this story of Jesus on the verge of his transition from childhood to young manhood, going missing in Jerusalem, takes place on one of these annual trips up to Jerusalem for the Passover. Now, already we've got our first hint there, because Jesus going up to Jerusalem for the Passover becomes a major theme in the gospel narrative, a theme that Luke emphasises more strongly and deliberately than do the other gospel writers. Much of Luke's gospel is structured around the big final trip up to Jerusalem for the Passover, a trip which culminated in the arrest and execution of Jesus. In tonight's story, the young Jesus is mistakenly left behind when the big extended family group head home at the end of the festival. And when he's discovered missing, his frantic mum and dad leave the group and rush back to Jerusalem to look for him. It's 3 days before they find him. That will probably give you another clue. This is not the last time that people will think they have lost Jesus in Jerusalem, and it's not the last time that he will reappear after 3 days either. It's also not the last time that Luke will introduce us to a couple on the road who are distraught at having lost Jesus, but who will find him again engaged in a discussion of the scriptures. Do you recognise the story I'm pointing to here? Right near the close of his gospel, Luke tells us the story of a couple on the road to Emmaus. He tells us that they had put their hopes in Jesus, but now he had been lost and they were devastated, and it's been 3 days now. And then Jesus appears with them, unrecognised at first, and discusses scripture with them, pointing out to them exactly the sorts of connections between stories that I'm pointing out now. And they finally recognise him in the breaking of the bread. Both of these stories, the 12-year-old Jesus lost in Jerusalem and the road to Emmaus account, appear only in Luke's gospel. And with one being close to the start and the other close to the end, they serve as something of a frame for the rest of the story. And to add further colour and light to the message that is suggested by this framing, Luke is the gospel that puts the most emphasis on images of being lost and found. He is the only writer to include the stories of the lost coin, the lost sheep, and the lost prodigal son. So losing Jesus, or being lost ourselves and finding Jesus, and being found by Jesus, are significant themes for Luke. And you'll notice, of course, that in neither of the stories of Jesus being lost does Jesus himself think that he's lost. It is other people who think that he's lost, not him. So Luke is begging the question, who is really lost when we think we've lost Jesus? Him or us? For Jesus knows what he is about, his father's business, and he knows where he needs to go to fully engage in that business. And it is often to places that we would neither be expecting nor perhaps be willing to go ourselves. Sure, a theological discussion in the temple might not be too frightening, although it's probably pretty daunting to the average 12-year-old. But the image here of Jesus being in his father's house, doing his father's business, is leading up to the later story. You see, the temple is not only the place of theological discussions. In fact, if that had been the point, then it probably would have been in a synagogue rather than in the temple. The temple is primarily the place of sacrifice. So it's not the place that you want to be when a hostile mob has joined forces with the military and religious power brokers and turned their anger on you and decided that you are the one who is going to be sacrificed. It's better that one man die than that the whole nation face the wrath of Rome, says Caiaphas the high priest. A classic expression of sacrificial logic from the most powerful man at the top of the sacrificial system. And so this 12-year-old story anticipates the later story where for Jesus to go about his father's business meant walking into the fires of hatred and hostility and offering himself to appease the wrath of an angry, violent humanity, and so expose the ultimate religious lie that it is God who demands that blood must be shed. Mary and Joseph, the couple on the Jerusalem-Nazareth road, thought that Jesus was lost because they didn't know that he would be about his father's business. They expected him to be simply fitting in with family business, which at this point was all about going home and getting back down to their ordinary day-to-day business. And the disciples later, including the couple on the Jerusalem-Emmaus road, thought that Jesus had been lost because they didn't comprehend that going about his father's business could mean surrendering himself into the violent hands of the angry mob. They expected him to fight fire with fire. If he was going to walk in and confront the powers that be, you fight fire with fire. They expected him to overthrow the Roman occupation forces and re-establish the throne of David, a throne which, of course, had been established by the one who the crowds lauded in the streets with cries of, "Saul has slain his thousands, but David his tens of thousands." That's the kind of king we want, everybody thinks. That's what they were hoping for and expecting of Jesus. So when the powers strike first and Jesus is killed, that's it then. Jesus has lost, and his friends have lost Jesus. But 3 days later, there he is again, discussing scripture again, and still trying to get them to comprehend from the scriptures that his father's business does not involve matching the world's violence, but absorbing its full force and giving it back transformed into love and forgiveness and extravagant grace. But even in the far less earth-shattering losing of Jesus in the 12-year-old story, there's an important warning for us about our expectations of Jesus and where we will find him. If even Mary and Joseph could take Jesus for granted and just expect him to be going along with whatever they were doing and wherever they were going, you can be pretty sure that we are very much in danger of making the same kind of mistake. How often do we just head off on our own business, unquestioningly doing whatever it is we've always been doing or whatever we've decided we should be doing, and just assuming that Jesus will be with us? Jesus may well have said, "I will be with you even to the end of the age," but he wasn't saying, "Whatever you choose is okay by me, I'll just tag along and baptize whatever you decide." Jesus has not offered to follow us around and bless whatever we want. He has called us to follow him around and to do as he does. As our reading from Colossians put it, to clothe ourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, meekness, patience, and above all, love, and to forgive each other as he has forgiven us. The promise of blessing is that blessing is found in following Jesus, in being where he is and doing as he does, even when it means following him into the fires of hostility, clothed only in love, compassion, and forgiveness. If even Mary and Joseph could get Jesus wrong and think he was lost, no doubt we will often make the same mistake. We too will be just going about our business and inadvertently leave Jesus behind and then panic because we think he's lost. And whenever that happens, then it is absolutely right that you'll have to get searching and retrace your steps and hunt high and low and pray hard and do whatever it takes to find where he is. And when you find him, stick with him. But take it from the 12-year-old and take it as a fact. It is not him that is lost.